This is the I Read Comic Books podcast, and I'm your host, Nick White, even though it gives Mike Rappin a full-on migraine to hear those words come out of my mouth. This week, I'm joined by Jonathan Francois, editor of video games, and Brian Murray, who's a friend of the show. How are comics this week, guys?
Comics are pretty good for me.
Yeah, comics are fine. How are you?
I'm glad to hear comics haven't wronged you in any specific or personal way, I take it.
No. I mean, Kieran Gillen killed my dog, but yeah.
I don't have a dog that
I've ever met. Kieran Gillen.
Kieran Gillen and Mike have an interesting history of interaction, so we're probably going to strike that from the record. But otherwise, true. I'm glad to hear things are going well. What have you guys been reading? Anything? Or Brian, what's been on your docket?
Yeah, I mean, number one on the list for me has been this this Spider Island miniseries that's been going on. It's Christos Gage and Tom DeFalco, and it's a really fascinating look at Marvel post Spider Apocalypse. If you're not familiar with the series, it takes place in Manhattan after the Spider Queen has taken over, and it's Venom leading a ragtag group of heroes to try to take back the Earth.
Okay. I have to admit, I'm only really familiar with Christos Gage in terms of the fact that he did some Deadshot and co-wrote Daredevil, so I'm glad to hear that that's a Secret Wars tie-in, correct?
Yes, it is.
And you're enjoying it, which from what I've heard is a little bit rare for some people that are engaged in Secret Wars in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I mean, there's no big tie-in to the rest of Secret Wars going on. And so I can kind of enjoy this just as a standalone book where, you know, weird things are happening to characters that I enjoy.
Okay. Anything else?
I've been keeping up on the Lando miniseries that's been coming out for Marvel, and that has been great as always. I've always loved Lando's character in the movies, so it's nice to get a little more background, get a little bit of a deeper character out of that.
Okay, how many more issues does that have left at this point? Is it going to 5, like Princess Leia, or...?
Yep, yeah, it's a 5-issue miniseries. The 5th issue comes out middle of October, I think.
And this is all sort of taking place, this is like during what would be A New Hope, or where does this technically fall in to the whole, I guess what we would call the new established canon, or are you not
yeah,
certain where that exactly places itself?
I'm not positive, but I do know that it is before A New Hope. Or at the very least, takes place concurrently to New Hope. It takes place before Lando becomes the Baron Administrator of Cloud City.
Okay.
So this is like his old smuggler, vaguely space piratey, roguish days.
Does he actually still have the Millennium Falcon at this point, or...?
No, I think it's between him losing the Falcon to Han and him getting Cloud City.
Okay. Interesting. I'm sure that'll be of interest to those people who actually know a thing or two about Star Wars, even though most of it's now been thrown out the window. But we're not bitter about the expanded universe being destroyed. Not one of us. Anything else, Brian? Or is that pretty much what you had lined up this week?
Wicked and Divine number 14. I mean, Wicked and Divine is kind of a given for me at this point. I don't think that there has been an issue that I have not enjoyed. Some have actually left me, like, on my knees with my fist clenched, screaming no up at the sky.
Uh-oh.
Like a bad movie villain. So it's dug its way into my heart, and I may die if it's removed.
Yikes. Have you enjoyed the more recent issues where the main artist has been swapped out? Or I know Mike's had mixed feelings about it, but have you enjoyed it, or have you found something you like about it? Or is it just passable, you know, basically a holding period of sorts? Or how do you feel about the recent shakeups on that book in the art department?
I'll be totally honest, I haven't really been paying attention to it.
Okay, well, that is total honesty.
I mean, I come from a writing background, and so I think that kind of skews my focus on comic books heavily towards the writer.
Okay.
To the point of hurting myself sometimes.
I was going to say, this is a problem that we've addressed on the show in the past with the literary art, literary emphasis sort of being an issue for reading comics. But I'll send you a copy of Understanding Comics by Scott McCloud, which I haven't read, and you can tell me what it says, I suppose, in regards to that. But that's good. I'm glad to hear that comics are still enjoyable, even if you're on the Marvel side of the fence. Just kidding. And what about you, John? What have you been reading?
This last week, I dug into East of West number 20. That has been an enjoyable series from the start, and it hasn't really let me down yet, which is a nice change of pace from some of the other titles I've been reading, where sometimes it feels like there's a low period or a lull, whereas this has sort of been a constant stream of things happening, and I have to keep up with it.
So it sounds like you're used to disappointment. That's good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I did come from Marvel, so...
Shots fired.
Uh-oh. Yeah, East of West is a book, I have to admit. Maybe once the whole thing gets compiled and thrown into some book that you could, you know, reasonably assault someone with, maybe I'll finish it at that point. But I haven't really ever read a book quite like East of West, where I've gotten about 9 issues in, and I still feel like there's virtually nothing I grasp relatively well at all.
Yeah, when I first started reading the book, I had to leave all of the issues that I had sitting on my end table so that when I bought a new one, I could then go back and reread one through whatever just to make sure I understood what I was reading in this most recent issue.
Okay, that sounds exactly like my experience. Anything else?
I also have Invincible number 123, which is, at this point, just become sort of a staple in my comic life. If Invincible's coming out, I'm always going to buy it. There were some periods where I didn't really like the what was happening in the comic, but it's turned itself around, and it's now back to a point where I'm enjoying myself again, and it's got to do more with space stuff and aliens than it did before, which is always an interesting way for a comic to go.
Okay.
And then last but not least, we have the new Rat Queens number 12. And it feels like this series has had some bumps along the way, and they've had a hard time keeping with the schedule, it feels like. But they do come out, and they're still quality, and I still enjoy reading them, although the artist swap over has been a bit jarring for me.
It's been a lot easier to read Rat Queens in trade than I think it would have been for somebody who's reading it single issues like you.
I think you might be right on that.
Yeah, I read the first trade, and I think I can understand why you might think that might be more of a trade read. I heard the art switched again. Is that true? Like, I heard it was Stepan Sadric for like 2 issues, but Jordan was saying it switched again?
It may have. I have to admit, all I know is that it's different from what it used to be, and I'm still trying to get used to the new art style because I thought that the old art style fit the comic very, very well.
Well, we'll actually be talking later about the old artist of Rat Queens briefly, so we can talk about this transition and how maybe you shouldn't be missing his artwork that much. So, but that's for later.
Before then, Nick, what's on your plate this week or this past week?
Yeah, I read a book called The Tomorrows. It's about 5 or 6 months ago. Dark Horse announced that they were going to be launching about 8 or 9 brand new series, and The Tomorrows was one of them. And it's kind of it's by Kurt Pyers, and it's sort of a dystopian 1984 future where more or less the greatest crime is being creative. So if you like paint, or if you create sculptures, things like that, you're actually more than likely to get arrested. And then they sort of have this, I think, like brainwashing component where they try to, you know, reintegrate you into society or whatnot. So you have this group of people that are fighting against that. And there's not much more to be said on it at this point, just because it's sort of more issues need to come out. A lot of stuff is still a little ambiguous and it hops all over the place. But much like East of West, I'm still waiting for all the pieces to completely fall into place. Other than that, I read Harrow County, which is probably one of my favorite horror books I've ever read. It's by Cullen Bunn. In the art, I can't think of the guy's name, but he drew BPRD for a really long time. But it's kind of like a Deep South sort of horror book about this girl who grows up with and seems to possess these weird abilities, and she finds out that she's a lot. The villagers of this town think that she's like the second coming of like a witch who they went and killed, you know, whenever that was. So they all try...
Like you do.
Like they do. Yeah, exactly. It's like, do you have a witch? Yes. It's like the witch flowchart. Do you possess a witch? Yes. If so, burn it. If not, you can drown it, and then if it drowns, then you know it's a witch. Actually, sorry, if it drowns, then you know it's a human, but then they're dead, so it doesn't matter. So naturally, the townsfolk do what they're supposed to do, and they try to kill her, and it doesn't quite work out, and... So we're now sort of the villagers are like, well, that was kind of a mistake, and we really didn't think about what we were doing. And so now there's sort of this awkward standoff between her and them. And yeah, it's a fantastic book. Tyler Crook is the artist. That's who I was thinking of. And for those looking on sort of looking for sort of a variation on the horror theme, I would definitely recommend it. That should be going to trade pretty dang soon. The other big book I read this week is Pastaways. It's not Pastaways. It looks like Pastaways, and maybe that's
I was curious, why they should have... I have to admit.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they've already written a couple times. Matkin's written about how maybe he should have rethought the title. But it's a group of time travelers, I think from the year 3000 is what it is, and they get stuck in our time, as they are wont to do, and now they're trying to find a way back. And, yeah, it's sort of one of those big, you know, adventure titles, and it's got all this funny commentary where a lot of times he'll draw, like, a red box around different items in the panels, and then if you look at the bottom of the page, it's sort of like a subtitle explanation for what it is or how it works, and they've also got, you know, super funny explanations about, you know, the perspective of someone from the year 3000 looking at things from the year, you know, roughly 2000 and saying, well, what's this about, and...
Mm-hmm.
I've really enjoyed it. That should be going to trade as well. And oddly, I just realized that all three of my books are Dark Horse. So go figure. That was kind of an odd thing.
I don't know. Dark Horse had three books.
Yeah. Oh, you mean three books outside of Hellboy and Hellboy related titles.
Well,
if
sure.
If you're going to make a burn, let's get it, you know, somewhat on point.
I mean, I didn't think I had to say that. I thought it just kind of was assumed.
Okay, now that we've offended probably the fourth largest publisher of comic books, we're going to take a quick break here, and when we come back, we are going to discuss this week's picks. Well, I don't know if you guys knew this, but every week comic books come out, with few exceptions, I suppose, and that means that it's time to talk about weekly picks. So, what's your weekly pick, Brian?
Kind of a slow week for me, actually. There wasn't anything coming out that I was planning on buying.
Brian, this is called weekly picks. You're dropping the ball here. Weekly picks. You got to deliver. Give me something here.
Runaways. Runaways number 4 comes out this week. I picked up the first couple of issues. But
okay.
I don't know. It didn't hold on to me, and I can't remember if that was a $3.99 book or a $4.99 book.
It's a Marvel book, so it's $4.99. There's practically no two ways around that.
Well, it's a Marvel Secret Wars book too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now who's writing that? Who's on that book? The only thing I know about Runaways is if I bring Runaways up, Mike Rappin goes, "Oh my gosh, Runaways, Brian K. Vaughan," and then goes on about that. So that's all I know. You're gonna have to actually fill me in a bit on this.
So this is a Secret Wars book, and I don't actually know who the creative team on it is, but
okay.
It takes place in Battle World, in an academy for students who are attempting to serve their lord and master Doom, the Doom God,
okay.
Who I believe you've spoken of in the past.
Yes, Mike loves Dr. Doom.
Mike loves Doom God.
Really, he's got a weird fixation with him. Mike just has a thing for metal masks and capes.
Metal masks and capes. Isn't that what Mike is doing this weekend instead of recording with us?
We'll check in with Mike in about 15 minutes and we'll find out exactly what it entails. Just kidding. That's one of the many false promises I'm going to make during this podcast.
But yeah, basically it's like a high school, and you have these dangerous exams to move up in rank through this high school. And I remember in issue 2, the main characters discover that they were actually killing their fellow students and decide to run away. And
I like how that's a surprise.
There was just...
Wait, we've actually been murdering other students? What?
There was a whole, like, Tron-style electric battle world that they all go into, and they find out that the AI they were fighting was actually the other students.
Yeah, they thought it was weird that the computer started crying before they killed it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my computer weeps blood all the time.
Yeah. Pay no attention. That's digital blood. We have a real great modeling engine for this simulator.
Unreal 4 engine.
Man. Yeah, and long story short on that, I enjoyed the original Runaways series so much that I assumed I must also love this Runaways series when it came out.
How's that going?
It's not.
Okay. You know, not everything lives up, and, sometimes you've got a really high standard to meet. And from what I've heard, Battle World in general is getting pretty mixed sentiments. Are you reading that as well, or are you just reading the tie-in?
No, I was just reading... I was reading that, and I mean, I'm reading Thor's, and I'm reading Spider Island, but I think those are the only Secret War tie-ins or spin-offs that I've been picking up.
Okay. Are you reading the main event book, or are you literally just reading strictly just tie-ins?
You know, it's funny. I bought the first couple issues of the main event book, and our dear host Mike Rappin gave me so much shit about it.
Oh, yes.
But
we have audio for weeks preserving Mike Rappin's sentiments on Secret Wars, and then we have audio for weeks of Mike Rappin defending 180 degree different sentiments on Secret Wars. So
Mike made fun of me so much that I stopped reading it. No, that's not true. I was about to say
let's get to the point here. Do you like the main or not?
Yeah, I stopped reading it. It was another, just like Runaways, you know, I didn't have $5 every couple of weeks to drop on it.
Okay, and I see you've also decided to truly become a member of this podcast, which means you've decided to break the rules and list a second pick, which is something we heartily encourage on this podcast. Tell me a bit about We Are Robin, especially because this is one of those books that, when I saw it being announced for DCU, I kind of was like, I'll wait for the trade. Was that a good idea, or do you think this is actually something that I ought to be picking up post-haste?
I think that waiting for the trade is probably fine. I noticed I had a hard time kind of bridging the gap between issues 1 and 2 when I was reading it. Like, I mean, we got into issue number 2, and I wasn't totally sure how we had gotten there.
Oh.
And maybe it would have made more sense if I had just read issue number 1 before reading issue number 2. But... either way, that's one of those where I stopped reading it in single issues because I missed a week, and I don't like having a hole in my collection, and the comic shop didn't have a copy of number 3 when number 4 came out, so I just stopped.
Okay.
Right, number 4 is not out yet. They didn't have a copy of issue number 3 last time I was there. That's what I'm going for.
I know the feeling. Sometimes you're like, you know what? It really wouldn't be that hard to just talk to my shop and get my hands on the one missing issue. But then you're like, nah.
Yeah, do I care that much?
Yeah, the comic book gods have given me an opportunity to actually cut down the amount of money I'm spending on comics. Let's just take this as a sign.
Exactly.
On that note, in terms of cutting things down, I notice, John, you were telling me that you also actually didn't have... you technically would not have had a book for this week. Is that true?
That is correct.
But you still landed on something.
I did. I landed on something, and I think what I'll call it is my comic almost pick. If I had had just a bit more money in my bank account, I would be consistently buying this series. But several weeks ago, when I put all the comic titles into the meat grinder gauntlet, that is the... which one do I like the best? Because I have to drop at least two of you. This was one of the ones that got cut, and that was Mythic. And I think I may have talked about this before when I was talking about the picks, or maybe almost picks for the week. And it's a concept that I enjoy. It's just, it didn't grab me like the ones I'm currently reading did. It wasn't quite as... when I got it in my pull list, I didn't think, oh, hell yes, I have this now. I thought more like, well... this is okay, I have this, this is okay.
Okay. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mythic is the whole book where the idea is that modern technology is actually being underpinned by magic, correct?
Yeah, that's the idea is that everything that science has proven is effectively just wrong or kind of coincidental, and magic, in fact, is what controls basically everything about the world. And this team.
So what you're saying is there are actually a lot of Republicans that would really, really enjoy this book.
Man, you're coming down on me for Dark Horse. Jeez.
You know what? I paint with a broad brush because I lack finesse. Well, do you think when it goes to trade, you'll pick it up? Do you think when it, you know, Image stamps that $9.99 and says, here's five or six issues, will that be enough of an incentivizing for you? Or
Maybe. The issue is that if I plan to buy trade number one, that means that I am planning to buy trades number 2, 3, 4, or however many they end up making, which those won't all be as cheap as number one, and that's really where I have to start planning for the future, because I don't know if future John will have the expendable income to buy those. And I guess I could just buy trade number one and leave it at that, but if I'm going to invest in the story, I might as well try to see it through as far as I can, and I don't want to potentially wrap myself up in an investment I cannot sustain.
I definitely know that feeling. I mean, there have been times where I've been like resentful that a book that I love came out just because I only had so much money that week. So I'm just like, ah, damn it. Now I gotta buy this too? This stupid thing that I love so much?
It's weird when you reach a point where you actually start hating certain books you used to love because you're just like, you know what? You're the one making me make these tough decisions, you stupid book. And yeah, no, well, it sounds like you guys understand the Image pricing model pretty well, so that's... you're men after my own heart. So, well, I mean, I don't know what sort of Image, the sort of racketeering emails you get from Image, John, where they call you up in the middle of the night and they're like, "Trade 2 comes out tomorrow. I sure would hate if you didn't buy it." Because I don't think that's the scenario that's going on. But nonetheless, my pick for this week is a tangible book, nonetheless, that I do plan on picking up. And the real question will be when. I'll probably get it next week when I go in. But my pick is Book of Death, number 3. It's a Valiant book. It's their current summer little mini-series. And I won't get into that too much just because, I tend to ramble on about Valiant for a long period of time. Everyone on this podcast knows that, and despite that, no one on this podcast seems to know that much about Valiant other than, you know, all of the bugs I keep putting in Mike's ear. But suffice it to say, it looks to be a pretty big issue because a villain who we really haven't seen in the Valiant universe for maybe about 2 years is actually apparently the big baddie behind everything, theoretically. So, yeah, it should be exciting. And hopefully I won't buy too many variant covers, maybe just one, and then hate myself, and then play Hello Darkness, My Old Friend, while looking at it as I bag and board it. So that's the plan.
I went to a weird place.
Yeah, well, you know, that's where comics take you. And if comics take you to a point where you don't feel socially maladjusted, then I don't know what you're doing, because you're doing it wrong. So... With that in mind, that wraps our picks for this week. Everybody just hold on to your seat or pants or whatever you have nearby to hold on to. And
the seat of your pants would be good too.
Yeah, you could do that too, because that's probably what I was going for and then failed to throw those words together in the right order. So hold on to the seat of your pants or someone else's seat or someone else's pants. Probably not that, and we'll be back in a few seconds.
Make sure you ask before you touch anyone else's pants. One of our topics today that we're going to discuss is how to deal with comics you like created by people who you maybe aren't so fond of. And this was kind of brought up with the recent altercation, we'll say, going on between Frank Cho and Robbie Rodriguez. And it got us into kind of a topic of, regardless of which side you fall on the issue, it makes you think, you know, these are two creators, and how do you separate them from their work?
So, right, like how do you separate them, or can you, or are they one and the same?
Yeah.
For those who aren't aware, you can obviously go take a look at Bleeding Cool. They've been giving us the blow by blow of this scenario for I think months now. For those who are interested, it's definitely sort of one of those weird situations where I think a lot of people are coming into this ongoing altercation at different points, and so some people are outraged for one reason, some people are outraged for another, but it's kind of weird and complicated, and whoever wants to look that up, go right ahead, because it's all there. Or you can go to Frank Cho's own website, where he's posting a lot of these images that are making people mad. And I think the true, if there's any humor to be gleaned from this, if you look on his blog, I think this is hilarious. When he posts these pictures, which I don't know if I agree with all of them or not, I still need to get the full picture. Whenever he posts them, underneath the picture, just completely separate topic, he starts going on for about three paragraphs each time about how his home renovations are going. I'm not making this up. Like, he'll post this picture and a ton of people get mad, and then underneath it's like, well, we cleaned the grout out of the tile in the bathroom today, and we'll be putting up some new tile on the roof. And I'm like, what a disconnect between the two. This is so weird. I think Mike pointed this out last week, and it's if there's anything that's absolutely hilarious, that is. But you're absolutely right, Brian. We've certainly seen a lot of this, especially now in this day and age of the internet, where a lot of these things sort of get announced on a much broader scale. The Frank Cho, Robbie Rodriguez thing is just one of them. I should have mentioned Rodriguez is the guy who draws Spider-Gwen. Cho has been including Spider-Gwen in some of these drawings to the extent that Rodriguez has felt that it's sort of like a, you know, his character or whatever, and Cho is misrepresenting it, or anyway, like I said, we aren't going to get into it too much, even though I'm clearly already getting there. But that's just one instance. I guess another would be the whole, another more recent one would be the whole Rock Upchurch thing, which both of you guys read Rat Queens, right?
Yeah,
that's correct.
Okay. And I assume both of you are at least slightly familiar with why the art has changed recently?
Yep. Yeah, we touched on that a little earlier in the podcast. Yeah, there was a break, and I didn't know why for the longest time, then I finally found out.
Right. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, and again, we don't want to dwell on these too much, it's more of the jumping on point, but I think Rock Upchurch was brought up on charges of domestic abuse, is that correct?
That's what I was led to believe as well, and he sort of stepped down from his position as artist to do other things, but it also may have been that Image sort of wanted him out of the picture. But again, we're not really supposed to be dwelling on particular instances, but it does end up coloring your perception of the overall series. If someone who you originally looked up to or thought, you know, maybe their art or their writing is good, suddenly has this horrible negative quality or has done something that you find to be displeasing in some way, shape, or form.
And that brings up a really interesting point, I think, of, you know, the way that when we enjoy the work that someone creates, we then invest a lot in that person. And we assume that because we like this one thing that they do, we must also like everything else about them. And it kind of creates a cognitive dissonance then when that person does something or says something that you don't agree with.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I think I think a really good example that's pretty well established at this point. We talk about Frank Miller a lot on this podcast, not always positively, but he really represents this tough eternal question a lot, and it's something that's not exclusive to comics. I think you guys would agree. We have this same sort of scenario of having to keep to differentiate between one's creations or one's art and one's personal life across all sorts of entertainment media. I mean, that is the foundation upon which tabloid magazines exist, is it not?
It is. Yeah. I would agree.
Yeah, and with Frank Miller, you sort of have this you have this guy who in the 80s and the 90s created some amazing stuff. His Daredevil run was unbelievable. His Batman stuff, which I can never, I'm going to screw this up. I screw this up every time. Is it The Dark Knight Rides Again? Dark Knight Strikes Again? Look, okay, this is Christopher Nolan's fault.
I think it was Dark Knight 2 Electric Boogaloo.
I think that's it. And honestly, Frank Miller, I'm not trying to be a dick about this. Like, when Christopher Nolan went and titled his movies, whatever he titled them, he titled them so similarly to your books that I confuse them all the time. But people know what I'm talking about. The Batman, those two huge graphic novels, and the Daredevil work, and, you know, obviously other things. A lot of people consider those to be some of the greatest comic book work out there. And it really set a lot of the tones for what comics could be. And he was one of the people that said, you know, what if Batman isn't a joke? What if he's, like, serious? And, I mean, maybe that got taken a little bit too far. He also did Year One. I should have brought that up. But here's a guy who had this amazing legacy and then went and did like 300, which, depending upon how you feel about that, people were kind of divided or felt that there was some possible, like, you know, xenophobic or, you know, anxiety about, you know, Middle Eastern stuff going on there. And then, of course, you had, what was that book called he did? Why am I blanking on this? I always come up with it. But the truth is, if you look at Frank Miller's more recent work, as well as a lot of the statements he said about things like Batman, what would Batman feel about Occupy Wall Street, and a lot of the other, you know, sentiments he's had recently, you do have this struggle between their his work and then his personal life.
That's interesting too, because at this point we're talking about, you know, the things that he does in his work that make you not like him, I guess, like with the idea of xenophobia or the what would Batman think about X. Then we're kind of exploring how hard it is to separate the creator from the art.
Oh, absolutely. I mean how have you guys handled the situations that you've dealt with, like the whole Rock Upchurch thing? I mean, I guess in some way Image made the decision for you how to handle it, or?
Yeah, I think they may have dropped him preemptively, or not preemptively, but rather as a result of what happened and the news that came up. But in a different scenario, I can't think of a specific example, but I feel that if I were to find out that a creator or some sort of creator is the right, best word, I think, of a medium that I enjoyed turned out to be kind of a jerk or a butt or someone who's not a good person, I would feel...
We don't use that language on this podcast, but Xander will cut it out later, I'm certain.
Yeah, watch your fucking mouth, Francois.
Carry on, John.
I would feel more inclined to, you know, we're more conflicted about buying that work or indulging in that media, and I probably, to an extent, wouldn't or would cut back or at least feel very guilty about doing it, because it would feel in some way, shape, or form like I would be supporting someone who had vastly different sentiments than I did, and especially if I didn't agree with them, I don't know if I could justify continuing to indulge or buy that media.
Totally. What about you, Brian? Like, if there was, like, some book out there and it was just, absolutely amazing and you loved it every week and maybe it had won a couple awards or whatever, and all of a sudden you found out the creator was, I don't know, running a meth lab in the back of a daycare center. Maybe that's a bit hyperbolic, but... I mean, you understand the dilemma that we've been, you know, setting up here. So what I'm saying is you have an opportunity here that if you are pro meth lab and daycare center, like, this is your moment to really let that be known, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really tough question. For me, it all comes down to separating artist and art, because, you know, there have been a lot of cases in other media, like John was getting at, where a creator or an artist will do something outside of their art that I really don't like or that I am strongly opposed to. But at the same time, you know, that doesn't change the art that they've already created. And it's really hard to... It's hard to look at one and not look at the other, but that's kind of what I try to do. You know, I try to look at it and say, look, this guy, I might not like him, I might not agree with him, but he's a talented artist. So I guess that's my go-to.
Okay. Well, I think you also possibly see this to some extent, maybe not in terms of creators being jerks, but have you guys ever dealt with a book where one of the people working on it maybe has very strong political views or social views that you sort of wonder if that's completely your cup of tea? Or, for example, like a couple years ago, Bill Willingham, the guy who created Fables, he got in a bit of hot water. Because someone asked him, is it true that, like, the kingdom of fables, or I forget what the community is called, but you guys know what I'm talking about, right? The where mm-hmm. all of them live. Is it true that the community of fables is actually an allegory for, like, Israel? And then, like, the invading, you know, surrounding empire of, you know, all the bad guys or whatever, it's sort of a, you know, a situation of Israel being surrounded by all of the other countries that aren't quite fond of it in the Middle East, and they're like fight back against it, and he said yeah, and there was a lot of blowback in that scenario, and a lot of people questioned whether it was a good idea for him to actually say that, or if he should have just, you know, remained mute on the topic, or yeah. So we've had scenarios like that. Have you guys ever dealt with that sort of issue with any of your books where you're like, I don't know if this pushes the envelope too far, or I mean, you guys read enough Image. I can't imagine, you know, you reach a point where you're like, I'm actually shocked and offended now, or you might be fascist. I don't know.
I can't say that I've been in a scenario where I've learned a shocking detail about someone involved in the creative team of a comic and had to make a tough choice, other than potentially it could have been with the Rock Upchurch deal, but that was taken care of before it got too far into the media's eye. So for me, I can't say that I have, which is why when I spoke earlier, it was purely hypothetical. So I could have been lying, I guess is what I'm saying. I've never been faced with this scenario, so I have no idea how I would react. I'm just sort of going off of what I think I would do.
And that's perfectly fine. We encourage the addressing of hypothetical scenarios all of the time on this podcast, even if Xander doesn't like them. So, yeah, I'm glad to hear that you guys maybe at least haven't had to deal with this topic that much. I mean, I would encourage you to maybe go read some Frank Miller, and maybe you'll find yourself really liking it, and then you'll have that wonderful personal dilemma to deal with all by your own lonesome. But until then, I'm glad to hear that you're not dealing with comic book creators that are assholes. So that's fantastic. I'm so happy for you.
Our next topic has to do with DC and a particular title called The Omega Men. It was canceled, and due to rampant fan support, it was actually uncancelled or brought back. And I thought this was rather interesting and wanted to see how you guys, specifically you, Nick, being the big DC fan here, thought about this or what your reaction to it was.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, you're the weirdo who reads DC. What do you think?
Right. I do read DC for better or for worse. And yeah, recently, I think it was maybe about 3 or 4 days ago, DC announced that they were going to be canceling about 8 different books. And a lot of DC fans were paying a lot of attention because we were looking to see if any of these DCU books, which launched roughly about 3 to 4 months ago, whether or not any of these DCU books were going to make the cut, especially because we had been told more or less by DC Comics to whatever extent most of us cynics read it, that that all DCU titles were going to be guaranteed to reach the 12-issue mark. Which, that's a pretty bold claim. I don't know about you guys, but I can't see a big two company saying, you know what, it doesn't matter how much this book sucks, we are going to let it reach 12 issues regardless. I mean, does that sound a little bit unsustainable to you?
Oh, I can see them saying it. I can't see them actually doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that shooting for, like, 6 or 8 issues would be a lot more doable than trying to shoot for 12.
Yeah, exactly. 6 or 8 sounds fair. 12... Like, when all of us heard 12, we were like, okay, are there any other things you want to tell us that will definitely not happen? because that's just crazy. 12? And
it's hard to think of, like, needing 12 issues to decide if I'm going to keep buying a comic or not. Like, I think that they've got a good idea of what their numbers are going to be like by issue 3 or 4.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, all of this came about because... a lot of people, there were a lot of really big fans for this book called Prez. Have you ever heard of Prez?
Yes, I have.
Yeah,
well, that has a huge fan base right now. And the Prez fans, I don't know how they got their hands on this, but they heard some ongoing rumors that DC was considering cutting the promised 12-issue mark, because Prez wasn't supposed to be guaranteed for 12 and then it would be an ongoing. It was strictly supposed to be 12 issues. Then it was done, regardless.
Yeah.
And there was some rumblings that they got their hands on, I don't know from whom, that Prez was going to end. And then they started making the rounds on the internet and saying, guys, like, this 12 thing, I don't think it's set for us, and I don't think it's set for any of you, New 52 books. And then sure enough, DC rolled out these cancellations. And a lot of books, give DC credit where credit is due. Whenever I'm trying to cut books from my pull, DC does the job for me. I don't know if Marvel is kind enough to offer these first-rate VIP services to you, but last week I was like, gee, I really don't know what I need to cut because I really love all these books. And then DC was like, Justice League United, done. Gotham by Midnight, done. My work here, done. so they went ahead and nixed those books for me. But it's funny that you bring up Omega Men being brought back, because I was looking in some forums, and the one book everyone was consistently talking about that they were really, really mad about was Omega Men, who's written by Tom King, who writes Grayson, and it is written by this guy who has the most interesting name I've ever seen ever. It's Barnaby Bagenda does the art. Hmm. Barnaby Bagenda. What an awesome name. I mean, that should keep your book from being canceled alone. And I immediately rushed out, and one of my local comic book shops had the first 2 issues, and I was like, I gotta read this now. And it was fantastic. And I was like, wow, how can this be canceled? And then 2 days later, DC is, I think it was Jim Lee, goes, by the way, people were mad about Omega Men, so it's gonna get 12 issues at least. Have you guys ever heard of this happening before? Like, have you ever had a, like, I mean, this is the equivalent of, like, Family Guy or Futurama being brought back.
Yeah, this is something new for me as far as comics go. If something that I've been reading has been canceled, it is done and over with, and I effectively just lose hope of seeing it again.
Yeah, same here.
But this shows that, hopefully, maybe... DC and maybe even Marvel might listen now to what the fans think, which is, it's sadly a novel concept, it seems.
Go ahead, Brian. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it does have a chance to set an interesting precedent about, you know, whether or not these huge publishers are going to start paying more attention to what the fans want and bending more to the fans' will, in a way.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of that trend we've seen in the last couple years of TV especially, where maybe 10, 15 years ago, if your show was doing badly, it would just abruptly get canceled. It didn't matter if it was 8 episodes into the season. It didn't matter if it was 2 episodes into season 2. You know what I mean? Like, your ratings were low.
Yeah, you'd just never see it again.
And you would never see it again. And, I mean, you guys tell me what you think, but I feel like media has reached a point now, especially with the internet, where you really have to be careful about really screwing your fan base. And so if there's a way to maybe wrap that season up or wrap that arc up or attempt to put some sort of end cap on something, that's a lot easier than dealing with a mobilized internet fan base these days.
Yeah, especially when you're gambling on whether or not that particular fan base will be noisy, let's say.
Right, or whether or not they're actually going to follow whatever your next creative endeavor is.
Yeah, if you piss them off so much that you alienate a group of people from continuing on with your brand.
Which I don't think would happen.
No, probably really. Not.
Like, you'd have to do something really bad to make somebody go, you know what, they canceled Omega Man, I'm not buying DC Comics anymore.
Like, right.
That's not going to happen.
Exactly, and I think it's very interesting because I imagine that on not only the amount of people reading Omega Men is not huge, it's definitely a small but vocal fan base, but it begs the question if maybe this is not so much of an altruistic act on DC's part as maybe it's a way to get that group to shut up, and then B, if they know that sales are going to continue to be weak or that maybe it won't make up the difference in trades, that DC can look back on this and say, look, guys, you guys made a big fuss. We gave you what you wanted, and you didn't really respond in a way that financially makes sense for us. So, I mean, thanks for engaging in this nice social experiment of ours, but you've proven to us that maybe we know better than you what you actually want.
This is why we can't have nice things, Gambit.
Exactly. You know, you clamored for this, and then this is what happened. I mean, this was proven years ago. There was an argument made that, like, the internet cannot effectively mobilize when it comes to things off of the internet. I don't know if you guys remember, like, minor side tangent, like the crazy amount of press that went into Snakes on a Plane and how crazy that was going on the internet. And then everyone's like, oh, it's agreed. We're all going to go see this in theaters. And then I think the movie added extra scenes and, you know, the budget shifted accordingly to this internet, you know, pandemonium. And then when it came time for all of those people that were sitting in front of computers to get up from their computer and actually go to the movie theater, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
And so I think in some ways DC is looking at this and saying, like, we know that you're mad right now, but when it comes time to actually involve your bank account in the proceedings, or when it comes time to actually get other readers to come on board, it's not going to happen. I don't know. It's made even more interesting by the fact that DC, I don't know if you guys had heard this in the past, but DC had always promised that every new 52 book would end up going to trade, so to speak. Yeah, that was one of the mantras of the new 52. It was going to be accessible, et cetera, but everything was also going to go to trade.
I'm going to assume that not everything made it to trade.
Yeah, exactly. About 2 months before the new 52 ended, they took two of the books, Infinity Men and Clarion, and they both didn't go to trade. And of course, everybody who had gone to the Amazon placeholder page for those books noticed that the pages got removed from Amazon. So,
yeah, I think that perhaps more so than, you know, will this or will this not make us money, what really happened here was maybe DC learned they should stop making ridiculous promises that they can't always follow through with, because that's the part that, if I were on this DC train, that would really annoy me, is that it just, you know, oh, well, we're going to do X, Y, and Z, and you know that, you know, at least X and Z aren't going to happen, and maybe you'll see why. But it just sort of feels like a bunch of hollow promises, or like a lot of bravado and chest pounding, when you know that there's not really going to be a lot of follow-up. And it'd be nice maybe if you would see one of the big two, or I guess specifically DC in this case, make a promise that they can actually follow through with it, and then do follow through with it.
Damn. So I don't know how many of you have actually read a book called Bedlam. It's by Nick Spencer. The art was originally done by Riley Rossmo, and I'm struggling to come up with who actually did the art on the second arc. But there's been an interesting note of progress in terms of that book. We actually probably haven't heard anything about the series for about a year and a half, and it's a little unusual because being an Image book, there's really never a cancellation. I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but Image books usually don't get canceled. They just sort of, one installment finishes and then you just never ever get another. I don't know if this has been the case for you guys, but that's always been my experience.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly don't remember hearing about a cancellation.
Yeah.
I just remember, all I can think about is finding out later, like, what? Oh, yeah, that got canceled.
Yeah, and this is easily confirmed by it. Sometimes you'll be looking for a book, and then you start Googling things, and then it's just a bunch of people asking, like, is this book done? Or is it canceled? Or what happened? This actually happened to me about a week ago. I was trying to figure out what happened to, Joe Keating. Joe Keating's book, Hell Yeah!, which the first arc, I think, wrapped in 2013, and they promised the second arc, and everybody keeps asking where that went. But in terms of Bedlam, Nick Spencer, the writer, recently posted on his Tumblr that there were some promising updates and that we might actually see Bedlam pretty soon. For those who don't know, Bedlam is a book about, and I highly recommend this to you guys, unless your tolerance for violence has not reached an all-time high. But it's about this bad guy called Matter Red, who's this crazy supervillain. He makes all other supervillains look super tame. He's got a real wicked sense of humor. I think at like one point he like goes into a church and like kills like the cardinal and like wears his hat and then his robe and like runs around.
That fiend.
Yeah. And he goes around wearing his clothes and kills a bunch of people. It's really twisted, and it's got a really sick sense of humor in some ways, but. Anyway, this mad scientist finds him and like rehabilitates him with some crazy electrotherapy or something, and now he's seemingly this good guy who's trying to help the police deal with all of his copycats, and the cops have no idea that they're actually dealing with the guy who inspired all of these people in the first place. So anyway, really great book, definitely recommend it, but it sort of begs the question of when dealing with books like Image, like how do you, I mean, have you guys dealt with these sorts of issues in the past, or like how do you find out if your book is actually gonna come back? I mean, are there any books you guys want to see that you honestly don't know what happened to them?
Well, so to some extent, when you're dealing with Image, a lot of the creators, as far as I can tell, will take a break for a month or two after completing an arc of six issues or so. So to some extent, I expect there to be a lull at some point after, you know, an arc is finished. There'll be a couple of months where I don't see the book. That being said, it's usually one or two tops, and currently the book that I am nervously waiting for is The Autumnlands Tooth and Claw. That one last came out in June, we just looked up, and we haven't seen it since, and I haven't really heard anything about it since either. And I am worried that this may just be one of those books that sort of fades away into the background, which is too bad, because it seemed like a lot of people liked it, but then again, I'm only really looking for the good reviews and not the reviews that said, well, only 3 copies of the 10 that we bought sold.
I was going to say, I don't know, John, if you read the scathing review that I wrote, but I'm kidding. I thoroughly enjoyed it in trade, even though bipedal animals that aren't normally bipedal set something off in me that makes me vaguely uncomfortable, as if there's like a potential animal takeover at some point. but that's just me.
Four legs good, 2 legs bad.
Yeah, 4 legs is fine. When you get up to 2, it seems like you're starting to encroach on my territory.
2 legs is my thing, man.
2 legs is my jam, so back to 4. Concerns of potential animal uprisings aside, I think John makes a very good point, and that's that Image has these interesting contracts that they've set up with a lot of their employees. And I forget which book we sort of saw a lot of this come to light in recently, but with Image, it's not like DC where you have a writer and an artist on, like, say, Superman, and the artist maybe needs to take medical leave, or the artist goes to work for a different publisher, or maybe they start a new arc and they determine that they're going to sell better with a different artist. And so they just get a new one with Image. A lot of the contracts are set up in such a way that your book, I don't know if you guys have heard this, your book does not continue unless it continues with the original team that started it.
Unless there's an extenuating circumstance of some sort.
Exactly, unless there's an extenuating circumstance. And that is what happened with Bedlam, because Bedlam did swap artists between the first two arcs. But other than that, yeah, your book doesn't resume unless it resumes with the original team.
Well, that's what we're seeing on Rat Queens now, too, is we're on Tess Fowler, I think, is the artist now.
I believe you're correct.
And that's on artist number 3 for that series.
Yeah, and it's I guess I have to ask, do you guys think that that's a sound policy? Do you think that it's just a natural reflection of what creator-owned comics are, and that's just the way they are, and we shouldn't read into it anymore? Or do you think that they've got an interesting model that other publishers maybe need to take a look at? I mean, do you think this is sustainable ideology for a big two book? Or, I mean, I realize that's 90 questions, but you can field a few of them, and I'll try to remember the rest.
I think that it's sort of it's interesting the way they do things. It sort of binds two people together in a more permanent fashion when they're working on a book together, which can be good in the sense that, you know, those two are going to be on that book, and you can expect that you're not going to change artists, and you can expect the same art quality throughout the entire trade or as the life of the series. Although, as we've seen recently with Rat Queens, that is not the case. And it's just sort of an exception to the rule that makes me wonder, is this the start of a new trend, or is this sort of a one-off issue that occurred because there was an extenuating circumstance where the original artist had to go for, you know, whatever reason that was, and then the new artist came in, and I'm curious why they switched from artist 2 to 3. That's where I start to get curious.
He went on medical leave, from what I understand.
Oh, I see.
Oh, Stepan Sajic?
Yeah.
Huh.
I couldn't even try to pronounce his name, so I just let you step in with it.
Nice. No, it's okay. I only know it because my friend, you guys have met Jordan. Jordan is like, Stepan Sajic is his all-time favorite artist for some reason, so he's been forced to master the art of saying Stepan Sajic, which is a... which is a very short correspondence course for those that are actually interested in participating. It's quite breezy. I you know, Microsoft Word in the morning.
Two CDs for $19.99 each.
Yeah, we'll put the phone number at the end for those that are interested in, and you know, stepping in.
It's literally just going to be Jordan's cell phone number, though.
Yeah, Jordan, just call this number at the end. Just call me, Jordan. I'll set you up with it. We'll be fine. But
steering this train back on topic, a book that I thought of just now that suffered from a similar issue that actually did find an ending eventually would be Wild Blue Yonder by, I believe it was IDW, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
They got to issue 4, and then they stopped, and there was no news. It looked like they had been canceled. It turns out they hadn't been, but I waited for what felt like a year. It probably wasn't entirely a year, but pretty damn close to it, for issues 5 and 6 to come out, to the point where when issue 6 showed up, I had forgotten that I actually was pulling that series, and I bought it just because it was there. And it took so long that I just completely lost interest. I passed the point of, like, nervously waiting in the sort of anxietal phase where I just think about it a lot and wonder, oh, is it coming back to... Yeah, it's probably canceled. But it did eventually show up. I just didn't care about it after that.
Yeah, you sort of reached a point where you weren't even thinking about it as a thing at all.
Yeah, it had sort of entirely left my mind as a possibility of what could exist in the future. It was that series had effectively been canceled for me, in my mind anyways.
And then, of course, that issue rolls around, and you're like, God damn it, now I have to give... Now you screwed up, quote-unquote, you screwed up, and now I have to pay money for it. Now I'm... This reminds me of one of my favorite books. It's also one of Mike Rappin's favorite discussion points, so I'm just going to bring up Sandman Overture. Mike Rappin loves that book, probably more than me. And yeah, issue one launched in October of 13. Issue six, we still don't have. And yeah, we're supposed to get it by December. And I guess we'll wait and see if that ever happens. But I guess that sort of begs a question, the Wild Blue Yonder scenario and the Sandman Overture scenario. And I'm certain this sounds very similar to a certain Hawkeye scenario for you Marvel readers. I mean, you guys are still missing, what is this, the fabled Hawkeye, like, 23?
I think that actually came out. I think it did finally get an end.
Did it really?
I hope so.
It did, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it did. But it was sort of underwhelming from the sounds of it. It just sort of, they snuck it in there, and then that was
it. And it came out long after the follow-up series had been long established, correct?
Yeah, yep.
So here's my question to you about all of these things. Are they worth the wait? Like, do you feel like, okay, this is a creator-owned comic, and clearly big two publishers aren't as lenient about things, so I realize that this is their passion project, and we have to give them time or space? Or do you feel like maybe people are being a little too lenient, and someone needs to crack the whip and say, like, you can't have a 3-month break and then come back for 2 issues and then have a 2-month break? And like, what's your take on that? Are people being too open about things, or is this something we should expect? Is this par for the course?
I think there's a threshold that you eventually pass. I'm fine with waiting if it means that I'm going to get quality, but that being said, there is sort of an implicit and implied agreement that after 1 to 2 months, I will again see your comic. And if I don't, it sort of feels like you're violating a sort of inferred contract between me and you. And if you want to sort of play in the big leagues, in a sense, if you're going with Image, there is some amount of accountability that you have to be held to. And yeah, there's some wiggle room for if something comes up. But ultimately, you really should be sticking to a schedule of some sort if you want people to continue to show support for your work.
Okay. What about you, Brian? Is there a point at which you say, screw it, I'm going to my local comic book store and I'm telling them to just remove this from my pull because we've reached a point where my patience is saturated? And even if you come back 3 months down the line from here, I don't want to have that nasty surprise of all of a sudden I'm paying for the book again. Do you reach that point, or are you, you know, pretty even tempered? And if it shows up again, that's fine.
Yeah, going down and canceling it at the comic shop is way too proactive for me. I'm much more likely to just shrug it off and go, well, I guess that's not happening anymore. And then if I do get another issue, you know, it might be good, actually. It might, you know, remind me that I liked that series, and I might go back and reread my old issues before
totally
getting back into this new one.
Yeah, Brian's like, yeah, that's way too proactive. Instead, I like to anonymously call the comic book store with a burner phone and a voice-altering machine and just, you know, make threats about the book until...
Oh, no, I just go to the coffee shop across the street and just shout passive-aggressive things at passing cars.
wearing sandwich boards, walking up and down the street wearing sandwich boards about Hawkeye.
Yeah. As long as I don't have to call and talk to the girls at the comic shop, it's fine.
The end is near, but Hawkeye's run isn't.
The end is near, unless you're talking about Sandman Overture, in which case...
Hey, you made that joke, not me. I just want to state that for the record in case Mike hears that. If it ever gets to Mike. So.
Mike doesn't listen to this podcast.
Nope. Never has, never will.
This has been another episode of the I Read Comic Books podcast, a production of Destroy the Cyborg. This episode was produced by Mike Rappin and Nick White and edited by Xander Riggs. This week's music was brought to you by Neon Indian, What So Not, The Far Side, Panama, and Infinity Shred. If you'd like to keep up with the I Read Comic Books podcast, you can subscribe to it on iTunes and Stitcher. And while you're there, take a quick moment to rate us. If you'd like us to talk about something on the podcast, you can email the show at cyborg@destroythecyb.org. Also, feel free to shoot us a message on Twitter @destroythecyb and follow us on Tumblr @destroythecyborg.tumblr.com. And as always, thank you for listening.
All right.
Strong pants.
You know, please note for the record, I didn't say that those pants were actively on another human being, just that the other person owned them. I want to be very clear about this.
It's going to be the title of this episode, just the problem with pants or something.
The problem, I mean, you would be surprised how much of a difference, you know, the law regards things when you pick up people's pants they're wearing and pick up people's pants that are just, you know, sitting on a desk or something. You know, there's not much leeway room there in terms of, you know, well, officer, it's pants in both scenarios, right?
Context is important.